You're listening to Irish Sports Talk. Hello, Notre Dame fans, and welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 321. We've got a jam-packed podcast for you today. We've got Matt Freeman on the line from Irish Sports Daily. Matt, it's good to have you here.
What's up, guys? Good to be here again.
And we had did an interview with Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus, and we recorded that today, Monday. We recorded that earlier, so we'll have that up for you next, and then we'll go into our normal recap part of the podcast, where we'll cover topics like what's the reason for Notre Dame's slow start on offense, why isn't there complaining about the running back rotation like we've seen in other previous years, who fills the shoes of Sean Crawford, and we've got some Twitter questions. There's a lot of recruiting going to be happening this next weekend with Michigan State visiting, so we'll ask Matt a little bit about that. And then we'll also get to our winner of our score prediction. So sit back, enjoy this interview with Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus. There's a lot of good information here, and we're really excited to have him on the podcast. All right, guys, we're joined by Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus. And Mike is an analyst over at Pro Football Focus, like I mentioned before, and he's going to be helping us out, answering a few questions about different Notre Dame players. And I believe, Mike, you're actually an alum of Notre Dame. Is that right?
That is correct. 2012, I graduated.
Very good. Have you been working at Pro Football Focus since then?
Yes, ever since. I applied right before I graduated and then got the job that summer. So
terrific. And where should listeners follow you on Twitter?
My username is @PFF_Mike.
All right. And do you make it a habit of watching all the Notre Dame games?
Yeah, I actually have not done the actual analysis process that we have on either of the first two. I'll be doing the reviews of them, though. And I obviously watch the games, but I think I'll be doing a lot of the analysis going forward here.
Very good. And one question I had, I noticed you guys put out an article breaking down the Notre Dame-Texas game. And I believe the game was on Sunday night. I believe it was maybe mid-morning on Monday. And I looked at some of the top-rated players, and then it had changed. There was an update later that afternoon. Is that typical? Do you guys have a process where you might go through a game a second time?
Yes. So one analyst in college will watch the game once, do all the grading and whatnot, and then a second analyst comes along after the fact, checks the grading, brings anything, can send anything all the way up to our lead analyst or chief analyst to decide whether or not the grade should change, and he can actually change stuff himself. So I'm part of the review process. I do a lot of those reviews.
Okay. One question that we've been going back and forth on the podcast with some of the listeners is the running backs at Notre Dame. There's been some, not complaints, but just some opinions about who the best runner is, who should be getting the majority of the carries. And could you just give us a grading for these first 2 weeks of Adams, Folston, and Williams?
Yeah, grade-wise, it's really not even close. Adams is well above average. I think he has eight broken tackles on 21 carries. Folston only has one all season long. He's graded out fairly below average. His yards after contact, that kind of stuff, also pretty poor. Just in my eye test, purely my opinion, I just think Josh Adams is the kind of runner you want behind that offensive line. He's not going to dance it. He's going to go straight upfield. And he just has more explosiveness, it looks like. He can run through tackles. Folston just, for whatever reason, has not regained that form that we saw from him a couple years back.
And then what about Williams? He really didn't play a whole lot until the second half against Nevada.
Yeah, he did not. He only has, 8 carries on the season. But obviously he looked really good in those carries. Had a couple nice runs, a touchdown run, and the run right before that. He has himself 3 broken tackles. He's graded out above average, slightly above average on those 8 carries. Also better than Folsom, but not quite at Adams' level.
And then when you guys grade out the players, do you take into consideration if the game's a blowout and a lot of the backups are in the game? Does that factor in at all?
Yes, that will. It's not too heavily. There's still, especially especially when one team's, you know, I don't think that Nevada was putting in their backup. So I think they're still trying out there. And so I think it's still, if you're running it up against them, you're still doing something right.
Definitely true. And then on the defensive line, Trumbetti, I thought in the bowl game last year against Ohio State, he played with a lot of fire. I thought he got after the quarterback. I don't believe he recorded any sacks, but at least was getting close to the quarterback. How has he graded out in these first 2 weeks?
Oh, it's not been good. It's pretty ugly, his grade. It's easily the lowest grade along that defensive line, very negatively. It's one of the lower grades in the entire country, actually, as far as edge defenders go. He has one hurry all season long, and 32 pass rushes. He's only gotten one total pressure. I mean, Notre Dame's defensive line as a whole hasn't been anything spectacular. I think there's only Jerron Jones and Jonathan Bonner right now are grading out above average as far as, you know, pass rushing is concerned. They don't have a sack all year. I mean, teams like Michigan has like 9 sacks. I think Alabama has 7, and Notre Dame's there with 0. That's just, I just don't love the approach Notre Dame takes to their defensive line. They just are just far too unathletic, in my opinion, at the edge. You need in college athletic guys who can, you know, stop the quarterback on those read option plays, who can take both sides of the option. I just don't think they have it right now.
Okay, so we're talking about the pass rush. How does Rochelle grade out as a rush defender?
A season ago, Rochelle was their second best pass rusher behind Sheldon Day. He was slightly above average in that respect. This season, he really hasn't taken any sort of step forward, though. He's just right at average as far as pass rushing is concerned. In 45 pass rushes, he only has 2 hits and 2 hurries. He kind of splits time between inside and outside. He kind of plays there. He'll play over tackles and guards, but it really nothing to write home about there.
And how do you grade out or decide if it was a rush pass or a quarterback hurry?
Hurry is basically anything that visibly affects the quarterback. If a quarterback sees it, you know, you can see if a quarterback's throw motion is altered, his steps are altered from what you'd expect, a perfectly clean pocket. So if a guy's getting guy beats his block on the blind side, the grade will be the same in our system. But if the quarterback's not even looking that way and throws a pass just completely normally, then he's not going to get the hurry, because the hurry's a statistic. A hit is actually when you take a quarterback to the ground. That's not a sack. And then Obviously sacks are, sacks are sacks, yeah. to tackle for loss. And we record sacks. We don't give half sacks. So if two guys tackle a quarterback on the same play, they'll both get the full sack for us.
Okay. And staying on the defensive side of the ball, Martini started against Texas, and then Coney started at that Will linebacker spot against Nevada. How did those two guys compare to each other and grade out?
Martini was a nightmare against Texas. To put it politely, he was their, I believe, lowest graded player on the entire defense. In 81 snaps, had a run defense grade of very negatively. He had 2 missed tackles, only had 5 total tackles, so that's not a good... that's not a very good ratio. And then he got sealed out and over-pursued a handful of plays there at second level. I think that a change obviously needed to be made. Cooney, much better in the second game. Obviously, not as tough a competition, but just from an kind of athleticism standpoint and what he was doing, you know, he wasn't nearly as fooled on a lot of stuff as Martini was.
All right. So far, this is kind of what I've been feeling, but I haven't really been able to put exact words to it because I can't, speak quite so, not elegantly, but emphatically or to the point. And then on Drew Tranquil, so he started against Texas and then was taken out in the second half, but he did start again against Nevada. Was there an improvement from Texas to Nevada?
Yeah, there was definitely improvement. That Texas game, the whole secondary seemed completely out of sync, just did not know what, just a lot of blown coverages and whatnot. So obviously they didn't have as many on the back end. I think Studs still had one that was kind of an ugly there early, the post that got behind them, but they obviously didn't have as many guys just beating them deep. It's always hard to evaluate safeties just because, one, assignments are tough to lock down, what they're exactly where their landmarks are supposed to be and that kind of stuff. And two, they just aren't involved in many plays. You know, a safety will get involved in pass plays maybe 3 to 4 times a game in college. So the plays he was involved in, much better. I think he had a pass breakup there or kind of late in the first half. I can't remember the exact timestamp of it, but obviously when he was targeted, he was in much better position against Nevada.
And then C.J. Sanders is just explosive, and you never know what's going to happen when he touches the ball. We don't have a lot to go on this year, but last year, as far as a special teams player, how did he compare to the rest of the country?
I don't have the grade in front of me at the moment. I can't recall off the top of my head. Sorry.
What about for this year? I was thinking there's only two games. There's not really that much to go on, but do you have that, those grades?
One second. Yeah, his overall return grade is one of the better ones in the country right now. Obviously, some guys that he hasn't taken one to the house, I don't think. But
no.
But some other guys obviously around the country have. And but for guys that haven't scored touchdowns, he's one of the highest at the moment.
All right. And then one final question about the running backs. And I'm just curious what Kaiser's how he's comparing to the rest of the country. But now I was going to ask you this with the running backs, but I forgot. Do you notice a drop-off in running back production when there is a running back by committee? I know Notre Dame fans have complained about it in the past when Brian Kelly had two running backs or even maybe three running backs that would be rotating in and out somewhat at random. Do you notice any kind of drop-off from player productivity when that is the case?
No, I've never. I feel like you see a drop-off in guys when they – are almost getting too many carries, when guys are getting, you know, 30 touches a game, like we saw from Derrick Henry last year. I think he just couldn't be as effective in those 30 carries as maybe a guy guys who only get 18 to 20 carries a game. I think the grading bears that out more, that a guy who really is a bell cow who's getting all those touches, just he wears down and doesn't have that same kind of juice on all those carries. So I think splitting time between backs is a good idea. I think maybe the distribution could be a little more favored of Adams. It doesn't have to be exactly 50-50. I think you can go, you know, 65-70-30, something like that. So, but I have not noticed a drop-off when guys do split time.
And then on DeShone Kizer, how has he been graded out and compared to the rest of the quarterbacks in the country?
He's kind of where he was last year. He's in the top 25 as far as passing grade goes. I think last year was right around 25 as well when it all was said and done. He obviously had that ugly throw against Nevada, underthrow, and his ball placement on some intermediate stuff has been questionable at times, but his decision making has been fantastic. Even that interception was, you know, not a bad decision at all. He had him open, just missed it completely. So I think he's not putting the ball in harm's way, and that was something that I wanted to see an improvement from him a year ago. He just had some throws last year. There were some head scratchers, and he really hasn't had that this season. He's just making much better decisions with the ball, but still some accuracy issues, still missing some throws, which hopefully he'll improve upon as the season goes on.
And is there anything that just stood out? Maybe you were watching the game and thought everything was fine, or maybe you were disappointed in one area, but then when the grades came in that you were surprised by, anything that really stood out?
I guess I'll just say I'm surprised at how poorly the offensive line graded out against Texas. And that's not even watching the game versus the grades. That's more just I thought they would be able to hold their own. I thought this was going to be a dominant unit all season long. Just no one was going to really be able to get to them. But they just didn't grade out too well against Texas. And then I think they rebounded nicely against Nevada. But I thought this, you know, just Alex Barrs and Colin McGovern haven't really held their end of the bargain. They've graded out negatively so far. So I thought those guys would come in and, you know, kind of uphold that Notre Dame tradition of offensive line play that we've seen the past few years, but really hasn't been the case.
That is disappointing. Hopefully it's something that, obviously a big team coming up in Michigan State, so hopefully it's something that we'll be able to get figured out just with some technique and some coaching and not just lack of player ability and talent. And Notre Dame is a 7-point favorite against Michigan State as they come in to Notre Dame. What is your score prediction for that game?
Oh, man. Score predictions.
I know it's so early.
Putting me on the spot.
No, it's Monday.
I think 7 might be hefty. They just have so many, just losses on the back end of that Notre Dame defense that it's just worrisome. Now, obviously, Michigan State's not, you know, a high octane passing offense like in Texas was. They don't throw the deep ball with that frequency, but it's still worrisome. I think Notre Dame does win. I think that this offense is still a top 10 offense in college football this year. But there's so many questions on the defense that I think they come out, I'll say 34-31, if I had to give a prediction, Notre Dame on top.
All right, very good. Yeah, thanks so much, Mike, for joining us. I'm definitely looking forward to having you back on. I'm assuming it's going to be you for our pro football analyst coming back on the podcast.
I hope so, yeah.
Okay. And we'll do that a few times this year. So thanks again. And what is your Twitter handle one more time?
@PFF_Mike. Make sure to follow me. I tweet out some good Notre Dame content sometimes.
All right. And you guys still have that special going on with FanDuel with the free Fantasy Gold membership?
Mm-hmm. I believe so.
All right. There's a banner over on our website, guys. So go ahead and click on that. And you can get the Fantasy Gold subscription, which is a $40 value for free when you sign up using FanDuel. All right, thanks again, Mike, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
All right. Randall and Matt weren't in the interview, so you guys didn't listen to it yet. Let's jump right in with our first question. The reason for the slow start on offense, we saw Notre Dame score a touchdown on the opening drive versus Texas and then against this Nevada team.
Thank you. By the way,
we're saying Nevada.
They
brought it up on the TV cast.
Yeah, I guess in the game day guide it said Nevada. The pronunciation was Nevada. So
the reason I said Nevada is because on I think the post game show for the Texas game, Jack Nolan said the locals pronounce it Nevada.
I see. I don't know. Some people have always said I've always said Nevada. So. I don't know. I figured you would know Ruben hanging out in Vegas all the time, but I guess not.
So Notre Dame gets a slow start against Nevada. What did you guys think was the cause of that? It's a lesser competition than Texas. We know who our starting quarterback is going into the week of preparation. Thoughts, Randall?
Well, a lot of it had to do with the penalties. I mean, in the first quarter... there were five penalties for 50 yards? That was just the offense, and the defense had penalties as well. It just seemed like there was a lot of mental mistakes made, and I don't know, maybe Kizer was trying to do a little bit too much. I mean, he was named the starter, but maybe he was trying to, you know, prove to everybody that he should be. But I don't know. I definitely was a little disappointed in the slow start, and mainly because of the mistakes they made.
One thing I noticed was on the screen pass, the numbers were not there in favor of the wide receiver screen. When Kizer threw that, it was blown up for either a loss or no gain. And then, there was a slew of penalties, including there was two offensive pass interference penalties. The one was on that opening drive. The second one was later. And in that can't happen. It didn't matter against Nevada, but against Michigan State, we can't have those penalties because that it will matter against a quality opponent.
What was the total penalties and yardage given up then at the end of the game? What was the total?
Not good. I think it was like 9 penalties for I forget the yardage, but it was something absurd.
94 yards.
Wow, that's ridiculous. And even on the defense, the penalties on that, I think they gave up at least 4 first downs off of penalties.
I'm not sure how many.
Oh, I know. I was counting when I was rewatching the game. I had at least 4. So just young player. Obviously, that's a sign, you know, that these guys are young. They're still trying to figure it out. And it was good. It was against Nevada. It's too bad we couldn't have played Nevada before Texas, but hey.
To me, we don't have to come out and score a touchdown on the opening drive, but if it's penalties that are stopping that from happening, or if it's just poor misreads by the quarterback, then that is a problem. But the opening drive, I mean, the offense is trying to figure out what the defense is doing. the defense is trying to figure out what the offense is doing. So it's not essential. It's not a must to score a touchdown on the opening drive. But I definitely want to move the ball, and it not be because of the Notre Dame having penalties.
Ruben was almost jumping up and down when they didn't have to call a timeout to start the first drive.
Hey, that's two games in a row now. And maybe it didn't happen. I know I tweeted that out. Maybe that didn't happen as much as I remember it happening. Maybe it only happened twice during Golson's 2012-2014 in that run. But it seemed like, from memory, from looking back, it seemed like it happened nearly every game. But it was probably only a few times.
Well, I think it was often one of the first games at home. It was playing at home, and maybe just the excitement kind of got to him. But, hey, it didn't happen, so they are improving.
Matt, do you have any any thoughts on that, on Notre Dame's sluggish start?
I mean, I kind of agree with what you guys said. I mean, it's just the penalties weren't good, but I think it's just a combination that they have a young team and they're just trying to figure out their way right now. I think that slow starts are becoming sort of the norm under Brian Kelly, which is not the most ideal, but at the same time, it's hard to get up for Nevada, especially after a tough loss at Texas, and then you got Michigan State on the horizon. I know some people make the argument that you should be even more fired up to play Nevada, but I mean, it was a short turnaround. I know people are going to say that's an excuse, but I mean, those guys played a very, very physical game against Texas, and I mean, some of those guys didn't even get their bodies back until probably Wednesday or Thursday. So it's just a tough combination playing a lesser opponent after a big game like that with a massive game the next week. So I definitely am curious to see how they come out on Saturday against Sparty.
Exactly. I was surprised that Notre Dame did cover the spread, and it's funny because I sent out a tweet before the first game, Texas, the 4-point spread, and a poll question, you think Notre Dame or Texas will cover? And it was 99% that Notre Dame would cover. And then this week, there's a 28-point spread. I mean, winning isn't in the question, but ask the same question, will Notre Dame cover the spread? And it wasn't 99% that said that they would not cover the spread, but it was about 65% from memory that picked Notre Dame to not cover, picked Nevada to cover. But they did, 29 points. So, way to go, Irish. Moving on, the running back rotation. I remember earlier, or a few years ago, last year it wasn't as much, but in 2014 and previous years, fans were always complaining about the running back by committee, running back rotation that Brian Kelly had, and we're always pointing fingers at Brian Kelly and accusing him or blaming him for the lack of productivity from the running backs
for not sticking
with one guy and letting him get into a rhythm. We have seen that. Against Nevada, Folston and Adams each ran 10 times. Williams came in the second half and ran most of his attempts there. He had 8 carries, and Kaiser also ran 10 times. Several of those were definitely on scrambles, but you do have it split the first three quarters, Adams and Folston, 10 carries apiece.
Are you trying to start something here?
No, I just think I was never on the bus that the running back by committee is an issue. I don't think you need to get into a rhythm like you do as a quarterback. So I was always one of the guys saying that it doesn't matter if there's two guys going in. But here's what I think. I think the reason people aren't complaining is because we're moving the ball and we're scoring points.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we've gotten kind of used to the running back by committee. I mean, that's what everybody does. Even in the NFL, it's like you need two running backs. Probably know that if you play fantasy football, you need more than just that one running back on a team. You almost have to get the backup as well, because that's just kind of how football is anymore. You got to have running backs by committee. And it's working, so I think that's why people aren't really complaining about it. I do have to ask Matt.
I think the main difference is that, like, back in 2013, it was Cam McDaniel and George Atkinson and Amir Carlisle and that that group, they were rotating every play versus kind of what they're doing right now, giving each running back a series or two. I think that's where you couldn't, it hurt the running backs because they couldn't really get into a rhythm, just getting subbed out every other play. Now they're leaving those guys in there for a longer period of time. I do agree Josh Adams should start to get a little bit more of the carries, but I do think also one of the factors where Folston has kind of struggled is he hasn't played football at this level in a year, so I think he's just kind of getting the speed of the game back and just getting down his keys, because I mean, practice is practice, but games is a lot faster than practice, so I think he's just trying to get his P's and Q's locked down, and I think once he does that, I think you'll see a better version of Folston.
So you do think he'll get better? I've been kind of – I've thought Folston was the number one running back before the season started, and now I'm kind of I'm getting quite a few tweets, and Ruben keeps rubbing it into, you know, how Josh Adams and Dexter Williams should maybe be getting more carries. But what are your thoughts on Folston? Because I know you thought – I agree with you as far as Folston being number one back before the season started.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely struggled at times a little bit, but, I mean, that's to be expected. I mean, he hasn't played football in a year, so it's not that easy just to skip a year or something and then expect to be one of the best in the country, you know? So, I mean, it's definitely something to keep your eye on if he's still struggling to find his vision and find where he's supposed to cut up field. But, I mean, I think it's just one of those things where you're just shaking off a little bit of rust versus not having that ability to make the plays. Because in camp, he looked explosive and he was cutting just fine. So I think it's just one of those things where you just got to get back up to speed.
Mike had a stat on comparing Adams and Folston, and it was about tackles broken. And Folston, I believe it was only one tackle that he broke, and Adams had a handful. And if you guys re-listen this, you'll hear what Mike said. But it might get better as time goes on. But right now, I think Dexter Williams gives you a much better option. I don't know if he's as good. He's probably not as good as Folston in pass protection, and maybe that's what is holding Dexter Williams back. But if you want to ease someone into starting to play again, let them do it in the fourth quarter with the backups and not taking potentially game-changing reps away from guys who are more explosive.
Well, other year, Folston has always been a slow starter. And if you look at the other, I'm not...
Well, let's just wait to put him in until the end of the game.
But... he seemed to do a lot better the second half of the season than some of his other years. His 100-yard games were at the end of the season, the second half of the season. But, yeah, I expected more from him, but I'm still going to defend. I still think he's a good running back, and he's going to find his stride. So,
and I do think he's very consistent and solid. I just don't think he is explosive and is a game-changer.
I mean, the other thing, too, is Kizer changes the play a lot at the line of scrimmage, and Folston's able to handle that, whereas Dexter Williams might not
be
up to speed as far as just making the adjustments on the fly like that. Because, I mean, I think Dexter has a pretty good grasp on the playbook, but when you're changing things in a matter of seconds, it's got to click pretty well to have a comfort out there, so... That could be also one of the things that's, I wouldn't say holding Dexter back because he's only a sophomore, but it's more of an advantage for Folston just because he's been in the program for 4 years.
And even though Folston looks to be the slowest guy out there, he still has the longest run of the year. So,
although I guess since you brought that up, Randall, we should just bring up the numbers from the game. Josh Adams and Folston each had 10 carries. Adams had 106 yards with a long of 43, Folston had 27 yards with a long of 7. And then Williams had 59 yards on 8 carries with a long of 23. Anyway, so let's move on then. Who's going to fill the shoes of Sean Crawford? And this just made me just sick and sad. I mean, sad for Sean Crawford that he's going to be out for a year, but it made me pity myself as well as a football fan, because I think that he was one of those explosive players on the defense, a game changer. And we saw it against Texas. He had an interception. We saw it against Nevada when he hurt his ankle, or the Achilles, when he had that pass breakup.
Yeah. You sound like a very selfish football fan, Ruben.
I am. I won it all.
That was tough to see him go down. And just knowing that the depth behind him doesn't have much experience. You're already thin at experience depth. There's a lot of guys there that can play, but they're going to have to step it up very quickly. And Coleman, he obviously looked a lot better than he did against Texas.
Yes.
So hopefully he'll continue to improve. If he continues to improve at the rate he's going that first two games, he'll be a great player.
Even on that long pass that he gave up, he was in great position and found the football. Then he slipped, and then it was a completion for a long gain. But, I mean, he was covering the receiver well, turned around, found the football in the air, but then just lost his footing and fell.
Well, and with that news, Nick Watkins could possibly be out for the year. His bone growth and whatever's happening with that, Brian Kelly mentioned maybe taking a medical redshirt. And so there goes, you know, the next guy that would possibly take his place once he came back in a couple weeks. But that doesn't seem very likely now. So you're down to freshman Julian Love as well.
So is that pretty much still set in stone, where we've got Nick Coleman as the other corner and then Love as the nickelback?
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. But, I mean, I would keep an eye on Dante Vaughn, and maybe a guy like Ashton White can step up. But if not, then I think they might have to end up bringing Troy Pride's red shirt just because he's a fast kid and they need speed up there. So it's definitely something to pay attention to. But, yeah, I mean, the Crawford injury hurts the secondary, and definitely feel for the kid. Just, I mean, you saw what the people that have seen practice over the last year have seen from him. He makes plays every time he's on the field. And, I mean, even on that play he got hurt, he got beat deep but still managed to break up the pass. So it's definitely a big loss. But I think Coleman has the talent to be a pretty good corner. I think people are pretty hard on him right now for essentially just being a second game at cornerback. I mean, that's not a lot of body of work to judge someone on. So I know he gave up a couple of deep balls against Texas, but, I mean, that's his first start ever. I mean, that's a position that's highly exposed, especially in the situation he was, where it's 1-on-1 against an Olympic track athlete. So,
yeah.
I would definitely give Nick Coleman the benefit of the doubt and let him go and sort of get a groove in there at corner and let him start figuring things out before you start throwing him under the bus and everything like that.
Yeah, and I think he's really has his work cut out, because, you know, quarterback's going to target him and his side of the field just because he's the most inexperienced guy. You got Cole Luke on the other side, who obviously is a very good cornerback, and so Coleman is definitely going to get targeted a lot, which makes his job even harder.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, Dante Vaughn was out there playing cornerback in the second half. Was Ashton White, I saw him on special teams, but I did not see him playing cornerback. Did either of you guys see him? Was he playing corner at any point?
I did not.
I didn't notice him out there. If he was, he didn't make a big impact, but I don't think he did.
All right. And I really did like seeing after Crawford's injury, you saw Torrey Hunter over there. You saw Folston go over there. You know, Folston knows what it's like to be out for a year. And I just like to see the support there and that they care about their teammate. All right. Let's go through. We've got some Twitter questions we're going to get to, and then our score prediction winner. Actually, who's our winner, Randall, for the Notre Dame-Nevada game?
Benjamin Nevum. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his last name right. But he predicted 38-17. So he
not bad.
He gave one more touchdown to Nevada, which I think a lot of people kind of expected that. But he almost got to 39. He's 1 point off on Notre Dame's score. So.
All right, here's a Twitter question from K. McManus, 81. Was our defense good or Nevada offense poor? Don't recall pressuring quarterback much or turnovers. And I hate the answer a little bit of both. I do think that the defense did play better, but I'm still worried about our run defense against a power running team. Michigan State, I think it's going to be a big challenge for our defense to be able to contain, set the edge against Michigan State. So I do think they played better, but I'm still very, very worried about our run defense.
Well, I have to throw this out there now. If you just take regulation, Notre Dame's defense is averaging, or they give up an average of 23.5 points a game. So it doesn't sound quite as bad if you do it like that. If you take away the overtime and average it out, it doesn't sound quite as bad. But I did feel a little bit better about even the run defense, just because of all the stuff that Nevada threw at the defense. I mean, they were even playing triple option football out there, and they had to quickly make some adjustments. And I don't really think that they expected to see triple option at all. And they made some adjustments, and they did a pretty good job of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Notre Dame got a lot of pressure on Nevada's quarterback last week. They obviously didn't come up with a sack, but I think a lot of the pressure contributed to the inability of their quarterback to accurately throw the football. It's definitely a concern that they're not getting sacks, but I mean the pressure's there, and I mean that's the first thing you want. But the defense did take a step forward. I think having Tavon Coney in there is good, but I mean the defense is just gonna be a work in progress all year, just with so many young players that they're playing. And I mean, I know that's been the I guess quote unquote excuse is Notre Dame's played young players, but they've never played this many freshmen in the two deep before. So it should be kind of interesting to see whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But as of week two, I think it's a good thing because you're starting to see those kids start to come into their own a little bit.
I agree. I would much rather play Nevada and win by 29 points instead of by 50 points. But getting your younger players in there, especially on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, I have to think this is going to give them just confidence. Even Drew Tranquil, I think there was a big improvement from Texas to Nevada, and he's a guy that's played quite a bit, but still. I just think, yeah, playing, it's just going to help you understand better. And I think it's going to keep the players keyed in more as far as attention to detail and seeing that, hey, they're going to get on the field, or there's at least the possibility of getting on the field. And I really did see some good things. James Onuwalu, I don't know. Against Nevada, yeah, I agree. I mean, he had, tackles for loss. I mean, yeah, I thought he played awesome against Nevada. And I wasn't quite so sure. I thought it was a little bit of a mixed bag against Texas, but definitely loved what I'm seeing from him and just hope that he can continue to keep on trending in that direction.
If he wasn't getting pressure on the quarterback, he was usually he was trying to catch the running back from behind. Like, he was coming from behind the line and catching the running back from behind. I mean, he is always in the backfield, and eventually he's going to get a sack. And he's definitely one of the most improved, if not the most improved player on the defense, or on the team.
All right, Mr. Dave, Musical Day 89 asks, what did you guys think of Flutie Tirico announcing team? And for me, I don't listen that closely to the announcers. What I like to hear when they point out, when they break down plays, saying, well, the offensive tackle missed a block here, or the Sam linebacker over pursued. I like to hear that kind of stuff. And nothing really stood out to me on Saturday as far as I wish they would have dove into this a lot more, or they they went too far in some other areas. So I don't really have an opinion on this. Randall, what did you think?
Well, I'm kind of with you. I'm not quite as caught up in who's announcing the game as what some people are, but I thought they did a good job. I enjoyed listening to them, and I would definitely be in favor of them doing it again.
Matt, did you hear it by chance?
I did not.
Do you have, what's your opinion on TV announcers?
I mean, Notre Dame, as far as Notre Dame's broadcast, I think when Mayock left, it went all downhill. But I don't know. I haven't listened to the game broadcast yet. I watched the replay, but I had the sound off. So I couldn't tell you how Tirico did. But I wasn't impressed with what I heard from Flutie last year. So I can't imagine it got too much better.
All right. We've got another comment here from Helmutone. How can our defense get pressure on the opposing quarterback? And Matt, what you said earlier, I do think they got pressure on him. They didn't get the sack, but they brought James Onuwalu quite a bit. He got after him. Our defensive line got some pressure on him. We did have a penalty too, a roughing the passer penalty, but the guys were getting close, just not close enough. And even Drew Tranquil was on a blitz at least once where he got really close.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any problems with how Notre Dame pressured the quarterback on Saturday. I mean, like you said, they just need to finish and get sacks, but at the same time, if you're getting pressure, then you're making the quarterback very uncomfortable, and that has an impact on his accuracy. And I mean, it was very evident. If you rewatch the game, Nevada's quarterback was definitely out of his comfort zone after the first couple drives. So, I mean, if the worst that you're doing is getting a lot of quarterback pressures, I mean, that's a positive, but I mean, it is what it is, I guess.
It doesn't show up on the stat board.
Yeah. On the Koluk interception, I mean, like you said, Khalid Kareem got the roughing the passer, but I mean, there's pressure from Dalen Hayes on the front side, and then obviously Kareem was coming from the backside, so they made him throw a pretty bad football on that play. And there were a couple other deep balls that if Notre Dame hadn't got there, I think they probably would have completed it. But I mean, they definitely got into his head. And Michigan State's quarterback is, I think it's only going to be his second start, even though he's like a fifth-year senior. So I mean, he doesn't have a ton of experience. So I mean, if they can hit him early, they might throw him off his game too.
What was that play you mentioned? It was good to see Kareem and Hayes get in there. Were the two guys back there, two true freshmen, are getting pressure on the quarterback. So it does seem like the future is a little bit brighter as far as the pass rush.
And Dalen Hayes was pushing. He was double-teamed. The one guy was a linebacker, or not a linebacker, a tight end. But he was pushing two guys back into the quarterback.
And if Cage...
Yeah, and if you watch the last probably three, four drives, Julian Aquara looks like a stud, and he can get off the ball very quickly. He just needs to fine-tune his pass-first moves and obviously get a little bit more filled out and add some strength. But I mean, you're looking for explosion off the line of scrimmage for a pass rush, that kid's got it. And even Jameer Jones at the end of the game, he came around the edge one time, and you could just see the bend on him, and he got around the tackle with ease. So I mean, the young guys, they can do stuff that some of the older guys can't. Obviously, the freshmen just are freshmen, so they only have a limited capacity of what they can do right now. But, I mean, the potential of getting a pass rush and ending up with sacks is very bright for Notre Dame right now, I would say.
And, Matt, can you tell a difference in guys in practice, guys that are in the two deep that probably will play versus guys that know they're not going to play? Is there a difference in the way they approach practice, or is it more just some guys are just on all the time and some guys it's hard to get motivated?
I mean, right now, just with this year, I mean, with Notre Dame's D-line being so young, all the kids are pretty hungry to get on the field. So, I mean, it's a pretty competitive environment. A couple of years ago, I mean, when you're looking at like Tuitt, Nix, those guys returning, I don't think it was necessarily as competitive. just because those guys were entrenched in their positions. They knew what they were going to do and everything. So I think right now, Notre Dame coaches like Gilmore and Van Gorder can kind of push the younger guys to compete, and that'll make the whole unit better just because everybody's on the verge of getting playing time right now.
And then Helmatone had one other question, and this is about Notre Dame's offense. Did not see the push against Nevada's defense to really open up running lanes. How can they improve on this? And while I do agree that there weren't huge lanes on every rush on every run, Notre Dame still ran for 239 yards. Even though it's Nevada, running for 239 yards, the offensive line was doing something great.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue the fact on that Notre Dame's line got a better push against Nevada than they did against Texas. You just had a couple running backs not see the hole. DeShone Kizer missed the hole a couple of times where he could have either kicked it outside and scored on one of those quarterback power runs that they ran at the goal line, but he chose to cut it back inside and try to run over somebody. And then I know Folston missed a cutback, and then I believe it was Josh Adams that missed a hole, and he kind of just got caught at the line for a shorter gain. But, I mean, they got a push against Nevada. It's just you got to have the guy with the ball hit the hole. So.
Yeah, and I think they're just going to keep getting better. You got three new starters on the line. And I personally thought they improved quite a bit from the Texas game, and I think it's just going to keep getting better as they learn to work together and do their thing.
And then our last question was from Cobb785. How many missed tackles did we have? And I actually don't have a number on this. Do you by chance have a number? Against Texas, I'd heard that it was 23, 24, somewhere in there. Do you have an accurate number for this game, Matt?
I do not.
I'd say it was quite a bit less than what the Texas game was. I mean, there were still missed tackles, but it was a lot less than the Texas game.
Yes, I agree.
But that does continue to be an issue, in my opinion. I think the thing that's kind of keeping this defense from getting better is the missed tackles and the penalties, obviously.
All right, let's just go down each of the different positions that we maybe didn't wanted to mention something about different position groups that we didn't hit before. Anything from the defensive line?
I liked what I saw from Daniel Cage. He was in beast mode out there. The one time he basically reached around the offensive lineman and grabbed the running back's shirt and just pulled him back, kept him from going anywhere. I think Brian Kelly mentioned this was probably his best game that he's had at Notre Dame, but he definitely did some good things out there. And then just the young guys, like we mentioned.
Anything from you, Matt?
I'm excited to see Jay Hayes this week. He should be full go for Michigan State. So he showed a little bit of what he can do at the end of the Nevada game. And he got to the quarterback, I think, two or three times. So he should be able to help in run support, too, because I know Andrew Trombetti struggled with that a little bit. So if Jay Hayes can get healthy and give some positive snaps on Saturday, I think that'd be very, very big for Notre Dame.
Is it pretty much a certainty that he is back 100% by the time Michigan State comes around?
I don't know about 100% because those high ankle sprains stay with you for a long time. But I would say just based off of what I saw against Nevada, he's getting to the point where they can probably put him in against a better team in meaningful minutes, because I don't think he was quite ready to handle that load against Texas, but I think he should be ready to go against Michigan State.
And we can't forget to mention Deron Jones' interception when we talk about defensive line, so that definitely came as a surprise.
I
think he was surprised as well.
it was two great plays by him. The offensive lineman held him on the previous play, and then the next play they did the screen pass, and not only did he sniff out the screen pass, but he also then caught the football.
Well, Brian Kelly said in his press conference that they don't run the screen pass when he's in the game. And in practice, they don't do it because he knows he sniffs those out right away, and they don't even try it. So it'll be interesting to see if other teams try that again or not. But one thing with that, if you looked at the ESPN stats after the game, they actually credited Jonathan Jones with the interception. So I thought that was kind of funny.
All right, linebackers. Tavon, always around the football. I don't think he's going to be replaced by Greer Martini anytime soon. You guys agree? Have any thoughts on him?
Yeah, I mean, he needs to shore up his tackling and clean up a couple of things in his keys and pass coverage. But, I mean, he had a very good game for his first start. He'll get a nice little test this weekend to see where he's at. But, I mean, he's a very physical football player that's not afraid to hit somebody. So I think he's made for games like this against Michigan State. And then, like you kind of talked about earlier, I think James Onuwale is putting together a very, very good senior season because he's making the plays that he missed last year. And he's just the complete player at this point. I mean, he's playing, his run fits well. He's rushing the passer all right. And then he's doing his thing in pass coverage. So I think it's just a player that's matured over the last couple of years and really come into his own. So, and then obviously Niles Morgan's had a pretty good year. Still needs to clean up a few things here and there, but going on, it's just trying to get him more experience. I mean, once he gets that experience, then those mistakes and those things that he's missing aren't going to happen anymore. And I think those problems will be cleared up here in the next couple weeks once he gets into the flow of things.
I noticed James, as far as the linebacker group, I noticed James a lot and Tavon or Greer, but I find myself kind of forgetting that Niles is there. But whenever there's a pile in the middle of the field, you know, he's often at the bottom of it and right there. But I think that's kind of a testament to previous years where we'd see the running backs or receivers catching balls in the middle of the field and just running for another 10 or 15 yards.
Yeah, I mean, he's a downhill player for sure, but he's athletic enough to help in the pass game. But, I mean, like you said, I mean, you won't see him just because he's always in there making the tackle, but he's not getting exposed either. So that's Niles in a nutshell at this point.
Matt, can you tell us anything about Barajas? That was one thing I kind of noticed when all the second, third string guys came in. We still didn't see Josh Barajas out there at all.
Yeah, I just don't know if he's quite ready to play yet. I know last year he was just trying to get his body in shape and everything, and right now he's just trying to learn the defense. So,
okay.
I think in time he could be a good player, but right now he's just still learning.
And he's not in the two deep, is he?
No.
Okay. All right, cornerback. We pretty much talked about this when we're going through our topics. Is there anything else that stood out that you guys want to talk about from the cornerback position?
Not really. I think we basically covered it earlier.
Yeah.
Maybe Cole Luke. I thought he did great in coverage, but then he also made a couple of plays. I believe it was on a jet sweep where he made the tackle, and then one other time where it wasn't the guy he was covering, but just made a tackle. And it's not just that he's defending his receiver, but he's also making plays on other guys as well.
And his interception was impressive.
It was, yeah.
But sadly, it was called back.
All right, from the safeties, Drew Tranquil, I thought he just looked a lot better than what we saw against Texas. He did still get sucked in. And he, on the one play I'm thinking about, he was actually held a little bit, but I thought he got in too far and wasn't able to stay on the outside to stop one of those runs to the outside. But overall, I don't think he really had a big breakdown in pass coverage, at least not one that was taken advantage of.
No, I mean, if you think about it, he's still a very young player. Because, I mean, he didn't consistently play his freshman year, and then last year obviously you got hurt early, and he wasn't even playing safety at that point. So
that is true.
He's trying to get used to the flow back there, and I think he's coming along. But, I mean, obviously the deep ball is always going to be a concern with him, with him not having the range that you ideally would want in a safety. But as far as the other safety, I mean, Devin Stutzel plays about as well as you can ask a true freshman to play.
Yeah, Stutzel was impressive, especially in the one tackle. I believe it was a running back, came right at him. And usually the safety, you know, he gets hit and he has to back up a little bit. But when he hit the running back, I mean, the running back stopped. There, he didn't gain any yardage when he got to Stutzel. I think he's going to be a really good safety. There'll probably be some downtimes, you know, with him being a true freshman. But he's got a bright future there.
All right, let's talk about we didn't really talk about the quarterbacks. Kaiser had another really solid game, 15 of 18, 156 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. And one thing, his first 5 or 6 passes were either to EQ or Sanders, and I think it was just probably guys that he was just comfortable with. But I did think that he scrambled too much. He ended up running 10 times, and I thought the pocket was clean, and I thought he did it a little too often. I thought there would have been guys that eventually got open, and when he did sit in there and wait, usually someone came open and he had a big play. He did it several times, but I just thought he left the pocket too early on a couple plays.
Well, yeah, I mean, it wasn't his best game, but I mean, how can you complain about somebody that goes 15 of 18, so... I mean, it's just one of those games where not a lot was downfield, I guess. But, I mean, there's worse things, as Notre Dame fans would know, over the last couple of years that you complain about a quarterback not doing or doing right. So, I mean, I think you just kind of take it in stride and hope you can make a couple more plays this week against Michigan State, as he'll likely need to do that, as they have a very, very good defense.
Yeah, and he was dealing with a couple guys that made their first career catch at Notre Dame. So if you look at the receivers he was working with. But the other thing, they were 6 of 6 in the red zone. So whatever they were doing was working. Because I think Notre Dame is now 10 of 11 in the red zone in 2 games. And
yep. That
is unheard of at Notre Dame.
And that was the biggest complaint offensively last year was red zone problems. So.
Yeah, but he had some big plays when he scrambled the outside, and then he found Sanders in the end zone. The other one was Stefferson. He about got Stefferson's head taken off. It almost looked like the Torrey Hunter play, but he definitely that's the biggest difference that I know between him and Zaire is he still, even though he was scrambling, kept his eyes downfield and made a play when the receiver came open.
And he looks very calm. And that was on a couple fourth down plays as well. The only complaint I have with that touchdown pass to Sanders when they were at about, I don't know if it was the 10-yard line or the 5-yard line, he looked over to his left and he had his 2 wide receivers and his tight end, and they were matched up pretty much one-on-one. And he never looked to the right side. As soon as he saw that, I think he maybe made an adjustment on the protection because that was when he slid over, rolled out on the left side.
Okay.
But, I mean, you could see he didn't even look at what was happening over to the other side, which it didn't matter then. One of the defenders that was covering Sanders came after him. Then he had Sanders wide open.
He knew that was going to happen, Ruben. That's why he didn't look away.
Let's talk a little bit about the flip-flop. So Notre Dame kicks off, and Nevada gets a safety. And then a few plays later, maybe it was the next play, Kaiser throws an interception. And then that's also then when Jerron Jones, a few plays after that, Jerron Jones gets the interception. But talk about a flip-flop of emotions, you know, where we thought we were good, then we were had interception, then we got the interception back, and then eventually Notre Dame scored. But that was a crazy few minutes of football there.
Yeah, and I have to mention the safety that they got. It's kind of Brian Polian was the special teams he helped with special teams when he was at Notre Dame. So, yeah, that wasn't his fault, obviously, but the player just made a huge mistake. That had to be embarrassing. I would not want to be him in the film room today.
I'm pretty sure that you only make that mistake once in your life. Zaire came in with 3 minutes remaining in the third quarter, and then on fourth down, they decided to go for it, and he flips the ball again like he did against Texas, but this time it is completed, flips it to Stepherson. And I know you see it sometimes even in the NFL, but I do not like playing carelessly like that. There's too many things that can go wrong. Your guys'
thoughts. Yeah, I mean, that's just Zaire's game. I mean, I'm not comparing him to Brett Favre or Tim Tebow, but those guys played ugly football, but they got the job done, and I think that's what you're going to get with Zaire. Is it's not always going to look pretty, but most of the time it's going to work out. It's just his playmaking abilities taking over. So, I mean, I definitely understand the concern because it is kind of reckless, but at the same time, I mean, it's just part of his game where he's going to get the job done regardless of how ugly it looks at times.
Yeah, it's true. I did see after was a big third quarter or a big third down where Zaire scrambled and then passed downfield to who was it?
Probably EQ.
No,
I'm not
it
sure
wasn't
which play you're talking.
It wasn't
about,
EQ.
But...
No, it was when Zaire was in the game. I think it was Chase Claypool. And then when the offense was coming off the field, Kizer goes over and starts talking to, I'm pretty sure it was Claypool. It was one of the freshman receivers. Actually, I think it was Javon McKinley. I believe it was McKinley. And the TV announcers kind of commented on it too. Kizer is the starting quarterback and kind of taking leadership and helping guys grow. It looked like he was telling him what he did wrong, what he should have done in that instance, because Zaire was scrambling at that point, and McKinley did something wrong. Anyway, let's move over to wide receivers. So Torrey Hunter's out, and we've got Stepherson and Holmes trying to take over. What did you guys think? Did they do a good job, or did we still feel the absence of Torrey Hunter?
Here's my question. Is Stepherson faster than Fuller? Because I don't know if Kizer ever underthrew Fuller. No, that was a bad pass to Stepherson, but that was the first thing that popped in my head because usually Kizer, I mean, he should be used to those throws because he had Will Fuller last year. So, but I was impressed how the wide receivers stepped up. I mean, EQ is obviously going to be a star, already is, and when Torrey Hunter gets back, I mean, you got Hunter, EQ, and Sanders. I mean, you got your three starting receivers right there that are great playmakers. I mean, any of those guys can make a play on the ball. Sanders, so much fun watching him weave through traffic and make a play. And even EQ, when he gets the ball, just watching him run, I'm definitely feeling very good about the wide receivers.
Yeah, I mean, I think you noticed that, or he wasn't in the game, but at the same time, it wasn't an enormous drop-off, and I think that just speaks to the job Mike Denbrock's doing as well as the talent of the young guys. I mean, there's obviously tons of room for improvement, and I think that, like what you guys are saying, it comes back to why Kizer might not have had the stat line that reflected the game that he had, just because there is so much inexperience out there, and I'm sure the receivers aren't running the right routes at all the time and everything like that. But, I mean, I think for what they have coming into the season and then losing Torrey, I mean, you had, Equanimeous, who started one game, C.J. Sanders, who started one game, and then I don't know who the other – can't remember – was it Stepherson that started? But anyways, I mean, that's his second game of his career. So, I mean, there's just a ton of inexperience out there, but Notre Dame still put up 50 points and 39 points. So it's just hard to argue that they're not having success. But I think Torrey coming back this week would be a very, very welcome sight heading into that game against Michigan State.
And Matt, do you know, are we pretty confident that Torrey will be back for this game?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, Kelly said he's going to practice on Tuesday, tomorrow. So that's just the last part of the protocol that they go through.
Okay. We did see catches from a handful of guys for the first time. Even though Stevenson played last week, he recorded his first catch, which was a touchdown. Fink got his first catch. And he had two on the game, was targeted four times. I believe he needs to get to eight to get over or over and under. I think 7.5 was the line on him. Holmes had his first catch of the season. I don't know, Matt, did he have a catch last or previous years?
No, it was his first catch of his career.
Okay. And then Claypool ran the ball once, but then also caught a 6-yard pass as well. And Sanders, I think obviously what he does best is weaving through defenders, like you said, Randall. But on that, he caught that fourth down pass, and he made that play. The defender was tight on him, but he came back to the ball and was able to hang on to it and not let the defender get in the way. So definitely a great play by him. Running backs. Didn't see a whole lot of Dexter Williams until the second half, but really looked powerful, looked quick. First half was mostly controlled by Josh Adams and Folston. And, yeah, we've talked about this. So I don't think there's anything more to say, except that they didn't use Josh Adams did catch one pass, but they didn't use the running backs in the receiving game. And I have to think that might be something that they might need to pull that out of the toolbox for Michigan State. And then the O-line. So we saw a lot of new faces on defense, but the second unit also came in the fourth quarter. And again, I just think it's good to get your backups out there, get them some experience, keep them hungry. Did you guys notice anything that really made you excited or something that maybe concerned you on that second unit of the offensive line?
No, I mean, it's what it is. It's the second team offensive line.
You don't sound too excited about it, Matt.
I mean, it's never going to be, like, in a wild moment. Like, it's those guys don't get a ton of reps, and, I mean, there's just not a lot of chemistry because a lot of them just bounce back and forth positions to kind of fill needs and stuff like that. Trevor Ruin, the sophomore left guard, looked actually really good. He did some nice things, and then I think Tristan Hodge did some good things. But, I mean, John Montellus, the right tackle, I mean, he's not going to play. If Bars goes down, I think they put in Tommy Kramer. And then, I mean, Mark Carroll, fifth-year senior, he's been a valuable piece of the program of teaching the young guys and being flexible and being able to play just about any position on the line. But, I mean, like I said, it's his fifth year, and he's never really played meaningful snaps. And, I mean, left tackle, I mean, it's just Hunter Bivin. I mean, he's probably good enough to start somewhere on the offensive line for most teams, but, I mean, he's sitting behind the best left tackle in the country right now. So it's just there's not a lot of chemistry built between those guys during the week, so it's never going to look too pretty. So.
Mm-hmm. All right, we do want to talk a little bit about recruiting.
Ruben.
Yeah.
Are you forgetting the tight ends just because they've basically been forgotten on the field?
Pretty much, yeah.
I knew you were going to forget. we haven't really seen much from the tight ends. I mean, they're out there doing some blocking, but as far as the receiving game, we haven't really seen much of them.
Well, they were targeted maybe three times against Texas. I don't think they were targeted against Nevada.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You're right.
I didn't think there was a talent was the issue this fall, but I am starting to think maybe it is a little bit of talent as pass catchers. Maybe they're not. Maybe the coaches don't think they. Well, obviously, they're out running routes, but maybe they're either not getting open, or something. I don't know, Matt. What do you think?
I think it's a combination of both. I mean, you don't really have a Tyler Eifert or even a Troy Nicholas out there at this point. to be a threat in the receiving game. And then I think also, too, just with them not being a threat, you have receivers that need the ball. So they're not, the tight ends aren't going to be your number one or number two option during your progression like they would be if Tyler Eifert was on the team. I think you want to get the ball to the playmakers like Equanimeous and KJ and CJ Sanders more than you want to get it to a Durham Smythe or a Nick Wisher. And then I do think that with Kaiser, he's going to look deep, and then he's going to look to his backside route first. And the tight end is just kind of in limbo. I think if Alize Jones was available this year, the tight end position would be a little bit different. But, I mean, it just is what it is. They're doing a nice job blocking. So, I mean, they're doing their jobs. And, I mean, like Kelly said, if the team doesn't guard the tight end or kind of leaves them open in spots, then they're going to start throwing the ball to them. But it's just not – they just don't have the playmakers that they've had there in the past years to make them the first progression, second progression.
Yeah, I was a little surprised to see that because I figured with the inexperienced receivers, we might actually see more of the tight ends, but that obviously isn't happening. And the one play that we did notice that there were tight ends on the field was Smythe's call for that pick. And kind of with that, the tight ends were actually on the Brian Kelly radio show last Thursday night. And when they were asked the first thing they think of, what's something Brian Kelly says all the time? And Smythe's comment was, turn your brain on. And so that was obviously maybe an issue on that, because if he would have done that a little bit different, he wouldn't have got called for that pick. But, yeah, that's about the only time that they, you know, they're doing their thing out there. You don't really know they're there because they're doing what they're supposed to. They're not asked to do more than that.
And there's guys that, you know, there's guys in the box, coaches that are going to be watching, and if all of a sudden Durham Smythe or Wisher is completely open and Kaiser just doesn't see them, they will let him know and that they'll take advantage of it. All right, one thing I didn't mention about on the defense. Against Texas, Notre Dame was on third and fourth downs combined. Texas against Notre Dame converted 10 out of 20. And again, for Nevada, on combining third and fourth down, Nevada only converted 3 out of 14. So this isn't apples to apples. Nevada's not a great offensive team. However, they did play pretty well on those third and fourth downs.
Does that include the penalties?
It wouldn't include penalties, I don't believe.
Okay, because a couple of those, Notre Dame gave them the first down on a third down play because of a penalty.
I didn't count it up to see. I just looked at the stats at the end. All right, let's talk a little bit of recruiting. We got some recruits coming to Notre Dame. Matt, you said there's about several hundred recruits coming to Notre Dame this weekend.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. That'd be crazy.
No, tell us a little bit more. What are some of the big names, and how many recruits are going to be visiting when Michigan State comes to Notre Dame?
Let's see, yeah, 5, 9, 15, 18. Right now we got 23 kids on our Sports Daily's visitor list between the 2017 and 2019 classes. I guess the headliner would have to be cornerback Sean Wade. He's a 5-star cornerback, committed to Ohio State, but he's been looking around for the last couple months. He's out of Trinity Christian down in Florida. He's coming in. I don't know if Notre Dame really has that great of a shot with him, but he's still making the trip up. Then after that, you get into a couple other defensive backs, Thomas Graham from California and Salvon Ahmed from Washington. Both of those guys are top five talents. Ahmed ran a 4.32 40-yard dash at the opening.
Wow.
He's an immediate guy that can provide a lot more speed in the back end. But I actually think he might actually be a better running back at the next level. So he does have some position flexibility to kind of move around, but I think he ends up in the secondary. Offensively, you got two receivers coming in, four-star kids, and Jeremiah Holloman and Hezekiah Jones. Holloman is probably the receiver with the most offers in the country. I believe he's at around 50. Wow. He was committed to Michigan really, really early in the process, but obviously he committed. He has a cousin that went to Georgia and then was drafted in the NFL this past year. But I will say that Georgia literally threw everything they had at him this summer on a visit to get him to commit, and he walked out of there uncommitted because he wants to visit Notre Dame. So they definitely have a good shot with him. Jones, he's committed to Texas A&M. He came up for the spring game, loved it. Notre Dame's just about the only school that he's even considering outside of the Aggies right now. And then Aaron Banks, four-star offensive lineman, will be in town. He's from California. He visited the first week of August and was actually surprised at how much he liked it. But he's a huge kid. He's 6'7", 305 pounds. But he was 340, 350 pounds at the start of the summer, but he dropped some weight.
Too bad not all of us can do that.
And then also on defense, you got Donovan Jeter and Jacob Phillips. Jeter's a four-star defensive lineman from Pennsylvania. He's kind of – Notre Dame offered him pretty early in the process, and he didn't give too much thought to it, but – he was hanging out with some of the Pittsburgh Notre Dame commits like Josh Lugg and Adams and Hennish this summer, and he got to know those guys a little bit, and Notre Dame's got him coming to campus this weekend. Jacob Phillips, he's a linebacker, but Notre Dame sees him as a Russian, kind of like Dalen Hayes. He's in a weird situation because he's taking all five official visits, but all five of the visits are the first 5 weeks of the season, so that kid is probably going to be pretty tired here come the first week of October because he went to Oregon, then Oklahoma the first 2 weeks of the year, then coming up to Notre Dame, and then his last two will be at Alabama and LSU. So,
and where is he from?
Shot with him.
Matt, where does he live?
Tennessee, Nashville.
Tennessee, okay. Wow, so he's going all over the country.
The last 2017 kid that has an offer is Jaden Cole. He's a safety out of Louisiana that's a very explosive athlete. I think Notre Dame likes him out of safety, but, I mean, he has the ability to play receiver too. So he's an interesting prospect. And then commit-wise, Dylan Gibbons, Josh Love, Kurt Hennish, David Adams, and Drew White will be taking unofficial visits. And Uvi Ogunfo, the 2018 linebacker commit, will be up with Marquis Stepien, likely Pete Warner. And then 2018, top offensive lineman in the Midwest, Jackson Carman. He's very, very much an Ohio State lean, but he came up last weekend and he's coming back this weekend. So Notre Dame has a chance to really make a push there. And then his teammate is four-star defensive end Malik Band, who has Notre Dame as leader right now. So it'll be interesting to see if he could possibly pull the trigger this weekend. But that's pretty much the big names coming this weekend.
And Matt, you said this is the visitors list over at Irish Sports Daily. Do you guys still have that special going on over there?
Let me actually double check. Yeah. Right now, we're not running any specials, just the season in. But, I mean, right now it's $9.99 per month, and you get a ton of content, team-wise and recruiting-wise. Or you can go for $99.99 for the entire year. But I would definitely give us a look and see what we're offering.
Try it out even for a month. It's $10, and see what they got over there. I know there's a lot of great articles over there and some great recruiting info as well. Randall, did you have any questions for Matt?
I don't think so.
I've got one. Matt, are there any high school play has started? Any insane statistical numbers for some of the Notre Dame commits? Anything that stands out?
Oh, I mean, Phil Dracovic is putting on a show. I believe he's thrown for over 1,000 yards in 3 games. So, I mean, that's always a good thing because he plays some pretty stiff competition. Outside of that, I mean, Notre Dame doesn't have a ton of skill position guys that are going to put up big numbers. I know Marquise Stepp is battling back from hamstring injury, but, I mean, he's doing pretty good. He had one carry for the year, and it was a 47-yard touchdown, so it'd be hard to top his production right now.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's all we've got for today's episode. This one's been longer than normal. Hope you guys have enjoyed it. Give Matt a follow over on Twitter. And Matt, what is what Twitter handle should they follow?
My Twitter is Matt Freeman ISD.
Matt Freeman ISD. And I believe you can also follow Irish Sports Daily Updates. Believe it's at ISD Update.
Yep.
And I think that's all we've got. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks for the Twitter questions that we got. And we'll be back in a few days for our preview podcast, where we'll talk all about Michigan State and the challenges facing the Notre Dame football team. So until then, go Irish.
Go Irish.